John chapter 13, page 956 in your house Bible. Short passage today, but wow, a humdinger. This is arguably one of Jesus' most impressive acts. John chapter 13, verses 1 through 17. Before the Passover festival, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now, when it was time for supper, the devil had already entered into the heart of Judas, Simon Iscariot's son, to betray him. Jesus knew that the Father had given everything into his hands, that he had come from God, and that he was going back to God. So, he got up from supper, he laid aside his outer clothing, he took a towel and tied it around himself. Next, he poured water into a basin, and he began to wash his disciples' feet and to dry them with the towel tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who asked him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I'm doing you don't realize now, but afterward you will understand." "You will never wash my feet," Peter said. Jesus replied, "If I don't wash you, you have no part with me." And Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." "One who is bathed," Jesus told him, "doesn't need to wash anything except his feet, but he is completely clean. You are clean, but not all of you." For he knew who would betray him. This is why he said, "Not all of you are clean." And when Jesus had washed their feet and put on his outer clothing, he reclined again and said to them, "Do you know what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are speaking rightly, since that is what I am. So if I, your teacher and Lord, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should also do just as I have done for you. Truly I tell you, a servant is not greater than his master, and a messenger is not greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." So, this is an amazing passage. Jesus knew that his hour had truly come. Now, he said that last week in chapter 12, if you remember. He knew that his hour had come. The hour had come, he said. But the hour was, you know, a period of time that was long. And at this point, Jesus knew that final events were in motion. He knew that one of the men that he had given himself to was going to betray him. And John mentions that three times in here. And I think looking back years later on this event, John was just like, I just can't get over the fact that Judas was in that room and he had already decided to betray Jesus. And we all just ate dinner with him. And then he left that meal and he went out and he betrayed his master. I think John is just, you know, just still years later is grappling with what it meant for him to be in that room that night. And so Jesus is at the table. You know, in those days they didn't sit with chairs, they reclined. And this is a bunch of boys. This is men. This is men who had been together for 3 years. They've been camping. They've been camping basically together for 3 years. And they had bonded. Day and night they were together. And men that Jesus loved, he had grown to love these men. And as he lays there and he's pondering what it's going to mean for him to leave them in a few hours, knowing that they would betray him, they would all, their courage would fail, every one of them, and they would all flee. Now, just imagine what you would feel like at that moment. You'd given your lives to these men. I don't know about you, but boy, I would be. When people don't trust me or betray me, it is really hard for me to like them. Real hard. And that's just something I need to grow in. But Jesus sitting there thinking about how all these guys are going to fold like a cheap tent. And imagine how you would feel. How could he not just jump up and start screaming at him? I mean, it's phenomenal. I don't know. What is it that could possibly keep him from doing that? Well, this is what it says. Jesus knew that the Father had given everything into his hands and that he had come from God, that he was going back to God. These two facts are what prompted what we see here is, one, he knew that Jesus was going to betray him. He knew his hour had come. He knew he was about to lay down his life. And he knew he was going back to the Father. And if you were here last week, we talked about that, where Jesus said, you know what? If those that honor God, the Father will honor them. And he had a grip on this that was staggering, that I think as he was pondering all that, and he knew he was, you know, in a few hours he was going to be back in the presence of the Father. And he thought about these men that he loved. He thought, what can I do in these final moments here that will mark these men, that will really show them that I believe this, that this fact is the fact that we need to get a hold of to be able to make it through life. What could I do to show them that this is what these men need to understand? How can I show them how much I care for them? That this must be your hope in this life. Something, not just a teaching, you know. Sadly, I know that many of you will leave here and forget all that I've said. That's just how teachings are. I've been to a lot of them and I've forgotten a lot of them. That's just what happens. Jesus knew he needed something different. He wanted to mark this. He wanted to put this deep in their soul, so they would never forget it. And so he has this amazingly purposeful, graphic lesson. And I think we need to remember that this happens, like all things in the Bible, at the speed of life, not at the speed of reading. You know, you read it in a couple of minutes, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, he washed their feet. But this was slow and methodical. They're all around the table. They're having the Passover supper, and Jesus gets up. And everybody in the room goes, where's Jesus going, you know? What's up with that? He's supposed to be eating. Where's he going? And then he goes over and they watch him begin to disrobe. They're like, okay, so we know Jesus does a lot of weird things, but getting up from the table to go take your clothes off, that's odd. So now the whole place is quiet probably by now. And everybody's like looking at him, wondering what is going on. And then he puts on the dress of the lowest of slaves. And he takes off his clothes and he wraps a towel around himself, and he's almost naked. And he comes, then he begins to pour water into a bowl. And every eye in the room just had to be riveted on him, wondering, what is he going to do? And then he comes back and he begins to do what none of them could have imagined in their wildest dreams. He begins to wash their feet. And he goes from one man to the next. 12 guys. That's a lot of guys. It's probably a half hour thing going on here where everybody just watches that guy get his feet washed, and then the next guy, and then when he's done with everybody, even Judas. And Judas didn't get treated any different than anyone else in that room. So much so that when Jesus later says, you know, one of you is going to betray me, they all think, is it me? You know, they don't get it. They don't get, well, obviously it's him. You know, Judas. It's Judas. You know, they haven't read the end of the story yet. They all think, well, maybe it's me. I mean, Judas, there was nothing different about how Jesus treated him. Even though he knew. Then Jesus sits down He goes, he goes back and he dresses, and then he comes back to dinner. And I don't know if his feet got washed. And he comes back to dinner, and they're all looking at him, and he goes, I've set you an example, so I want you to do this. So they couldn't have made it more obvious that this was something not just to be marveled at. This was not something that was just going to be a great story to tell people. This was something he wanted them to do. And he couldn't have made it more plain. So we need to figure this out. This is important. This is probably the most purposeful lesson we see Jesus teaching his disciples. And so we, as his disciples, we need to get this. We need to understand this, and we need to do this, not just understand. We need to do. But before you do, you have to understand. So what does it mean to wash one another's feet? In our culture today, you know, what does that mean? Well, one thing I'm pretty convinced it is not is ceremonial foot washing. I think that's the dumbest thing Christians do personally. Now, you may have a different opinion, and I respect that. But for me, it's totally the opposite. Because this is nothing that you would be up on a stage doing and people watching you. Like, oh, you're washing feet. No, the person that washed your feet in those days, I bet nobody even knew their name. They weren't even noticed as a person. They were just kicked if they did it wrong. I mean, there was no glory in this at all. No slave wanted to be the foot washer. This was like, you were just like a non-person. I think a much better example would be as if you just went out in the parking lot when nobody was noticing and washed everybody's car. Or went and picked up their dog poop or cleaned their toilet. That's what this is. This is like actual things that need to be done that nobody wants to do. That's what foot washing is. You know, it's like these guys, you know how guys are. Well, ladies, maybe you don't, but bunch of guys camping together for 3 years, hygiene may not have been on their top list. I don't know. So they're all laying around the table, and maybe it was, though. Maybe they're thinking, you know, it'd be nice if we weren't in this nomadic life where we had enough time and organization to have a foot washer around here. You know, I'm tired of stinky feet. But it would never enter their mind that they ought to wash feet, because we got foot washers to wash people's feet, and we don't do that. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about stuff that just... You just think, yeah, we don't do that. No, that's not what people like me do. That's what foot washing is. You know, they're probably thinking, man, I bet when Jesus gets his kingdom established, we'll have some foot washers then. You know, they were going to sit on the 12 thrones, right? You know, they arguing about who's the greatest, and I'm going to have 6 foot washers, you know? But never did it enter their mind that maybe they would wash one another's feet. It is the final demonstration of the truth that Jesus has taught in the last chapter and throughout when he said that you must lose your life in this world to gain eternal things. See, the reason they were shocked by what Jesus was doing because it ran against every value system in this world. I mean, in the system of this world, it is better to be sitting at the table getting your feet washed than it is to be the foot washer. I mean, we all know that. That's the whole point of being great and having authority in this world, is that you get to have other people do that stuff that you don't want to do. That's why we try to get ahead. That's why there are starter entry-level positions and management, right? Because management, your goal is to get into management so you don't have to do those things. That's the way the whole world works. As Jesus said to the rulers of the Gentiles, lord it over people. Right? They want to be better. They want to be the one that gets served. And that just is ingrained in our thinking in almost every way imaginable. Not even slaves want to be the foot washer. And Jesus is making a huge statement here that we've got it wrong. That our definition of greatness and the whole world's definition is wrong. That in God's kingdom, it's different. And it's a visual demonstration of how opposite these economies are. Because when Jesus chose greatness in God's kingdom, you can't help but look at him and go, well, you just lost everything in the world. I mean, if the Pharisees saw him washing feet half naked with a towel around him, I mean, whatever respect they had for him would just be totally gone. But Jesus chose greatness in God's kingdom. But it comes at a cost of this world. When we choose to gain in God's kingdom, the world will look at us and despise us. Now, it's also, I think, important to understand here. He's not saying everybody's equal. You know, we're all equal. We should wash one another's feet. No, he doesn't say that at all. He says, look, you say I'm Lord. You're right. And Lord here is not God, I don't think. I don't think their theology was that developed at this point. Lord means master. Lord means, you know, the better than me. We don't really have this in our world. But, you know, back in England, lords and ladies, you know, the commoners couldn't touch them, you know. That's what they're saying. You say, I am Lord. You say, I'm better. I'm a level above you guys. You're right. I'm your teacher. I'm your master. Yes, that's true. There is greatness, but it's just different than what we think. He's great because he chooses to seek things in God's economy. We become great in a different way than we think. Greatness is demonstrated and expressed differently than what the world thinks. His disciple Matthew put it real succinctly. He just said this, the greatest among you will be your servant. Now that's real straight, real plain. You know, hard to miss, you know, the greatest is going to be the servant. But even though this is so succinct and it is so plain, we don't get it. Here's what happens. We read the greatness part. Well, maybe it's just me. Okay, so I'll just talk about my own. We read the greatness part and I think, okay, great. If I can just serve for a little while, then I'll get to be the great guy. It's just so ingrained in us. And I'd like to tell you a story about the Lord and how he taught me about this. You know, for about 35 years now, I've been a sound guy at church. I volunteered. And for a lot of those years, our church was growing really fast, and I was basically the only guy and was learning how to do it. We had three services a weekend, plus midweek services, and I was at all of them. And I've easily spent thousands of hours as a volunteer, hauling gear, setting it up, tearing it down, standing or sitting behind a soundboard so that bands can perform. And as John knows, and Rick, when you do this, you don't always get a lot of kudos. Basically, your job as a sound man is to be not noticed. You know, if you're doing a great job, nobody will pay attention to you. And it's just the nature of the job. For the band, you are the impediment between them and their artistic greatness. You are the reason why they do not sound like on the album. That's just the nature of the beast. That's just how it is. And everybody in the audience, it's amazing how many outstanding sound men there are in the audience. They all know how it should be run. Even without spending the 3 hours that you did getting ready, they just know what should happen. And it's either too loud or it's not loud enough, or they can't hear their favorite instrument or their relative. That's basically what it comes down to. And for years, you know, I set up and I would be there for practices, which meant 3 or 4 hours. And for a lot of those years, it was on a Friday night. And I had three little kids, three under three. I mean, and so me being gone all the time, and I would have to go to church in the morning at like 7 a.m., and my wife had to get all three kids ready. And I mean, the amount of pressure that it put on our family, she would have to pray every week on the way to church that there'd be somebody to help her get the kids in from the parking lot because they couldn't all walk yet. You know, it was just like, so it was a lot of pressure on my family and me and you know, and most of the time, don't get me wrong, I loved it. I feel like God had gifted me, and it was good, but not always. And one night, I was there, it was late. We used to practice from 9 to midnight on a Friday, man, and I was just like, I was an engineer. I'd worked all day, and my needed to be home, and I wasn't, and I'm actually practice, you know, somehow the band always thought I needed to be there, but usually it's just watching them talk and fiddle on their instruments. And you can't really do your job because they're never really playing, which is what you need. And they weren't happy, and I was walking back and forth praying. Well, I was complaining to God is what I was doing. And I was thinking about how nobody really seemed to appreciate all that I was doing. I mean, I'd been there for hours. I was there hours, twice as long as any of the band members, every time. And I just thought, you know what? Nobody seems to appreciate what is going on here. And I was just complaining. And the Lord had me think about these verses. Luke 17:7-10. Jesus said this. He said, "Which one of you, having a servant tending sheep or plowing, will say to him when he comes in from the field, 'Oh, come in and sit down. I'll get you something to eat.' Instead, will he not tell him, 'Hey, prepare something for me to eat. Get ready and serve me while I eat. And later, you may come and eat and drink.' Does he thank the servant because he did what he was commanded? Is that how we treat servants? No, we don't, do we? We expect them to do what they're supposed to do. In the same way, when you have done all that you were commanded, you should say, 'We are worthless servants. We've only done our duty.'" And I tell you, it was like a shaft to the heart. I was like, oh, God, okay. God says, "Charlie, what are you trying to become? Are you being a servant because you want to be treated like a king? Are you trying to become a king or are you trying to become a servant? I want you to become a servant." I thought, wow, okay. Okay. You know, why am I doing this? I mean, that set me back. Because in Jesus' economy, if you want to be great, you become a servant. You don't just serve. See, I was serving a lot. I was getting tired of serving. God said, don't serve. Become a servant. And it's just so easily focus on the great part and think, wow, this means we don't have to serve anymore. You know. But if being a servant is greatness, when will you graduate out? You won't, right? It's not like Jesus did something way out of character when he did this. It's like, oh, if I do this, I won't have to serve. You know what? He's still a servant in heaven. Do you think it's changed? Do you think the Father's will is not his heartbeat in heaven? It is, because he's a servant. Not he serves, but he is a servant. It's what comes out of him. That's how great he is. Why do you think we can pray to him? Because he'll still serve us. Because he is a servant. He's great. That's how great he is. But, you know, grasping this and changing our idea, our definition of greatness is not easy. It's hard. And so when Jesus comes to Peter, he gets this reaction, you know, oh, you're not going to wash my feet. Because for Peter, it just turned everything in his world upside down to have his master serving him. It was like, no. And he felt like, if I let you do this, then I'm saying I'm greater than you. And there's just this visceral reaction from Peter. No, never. And Jesus looks at him and said, "Peter, you don't even get what I'm doing now." And I think there's a couple of things I think about here. Peter didn't yet grasp how much Jesus was going to give. Peter didn't yet grasp that Judas was in the room. Peter didn't yet get it that Jesus was about to die. And if he had realized those things that Jesus is washing his feet, you know, it just would have sent him into orbit. I think that's maybe one thing. But the word, the Greek word there is, Jesus says, you don't know, you don't understand now, but you will know. And that know is an experiential know. Peter, you're going to get this later because you're going to experience this. I wonder if Jesus partly said, you know, Peter, I'm looking ahead. I know you're going to become a man that this will become normal. You will know this. You will understand this. You will do this. You will both be served and you will be a servant. Peter, I'm going to transform you. You're going to get this. But he has this reaction. You know, no, I don't want you to serve me. It's hard getting served, isn't it? When somebody tries to serve you, if they serve you in love, now if we're paying them, if we think they're a servant, not a problem. But somebody that's doing it because they love you. Sometimes it's really hard to accept that. It calls to us. It is a humbling thing because it's true love. Because when you become a servant, you look at somebody else and you say, it is your needs that are important, not mine. I will sacrifice to do you good. And even John Mayer knows, you know, love is a verb. We get that this is more than words. This is powerful. This is it reaches in and it calls for a response from us. And sometimes we're not willing to give that. Sometimes it can make us feel guilty. We're like, oh, I should have done that. Oh, and if we're a scorekeeper in life, we can go, no, I don't want to be in your debt. And we all know people like this that are really hard. They won't let us serve them. And we know that it relationally, it just puts up this fence between us and them. And that's why Jesus says, Peter, if you don't let me serve you, you have no part of me. And I love Peter. You know, Peter's the poster boy for being impetuous. Okay, then watch me, you know. But he quickly changes. He says, look, no, Jesus, I want you. I want relationship with you. And, you know, sometimes this is the way it is with salvation. People don't want to get saved. We have to come to that humbling point where we go, Jesus, you must serve me. You must save me. I do not deserve. I cannot do. I must be served. I must be helped. And that's the position we need to be in with Jesus always. Jesus, I need you. Jesus, I accept you. I want, you must serve me. We must be humble before him. You know, Jesus says this. He did it to demonstrate his love to them. How are you at being served? It's hard, isn't it? I think we need to grow in both. We need to allow people to love us, to serve us. And we need to be willing to accept the responsibility of that and return love. So Jesus gets done with this. He washes their feet and he goes back to the table. And then he looks at them and he says, I want you to do this. They were going to be the leaders of his church. And in this action right here, Jesus set his church apart from any organization on the earth. Because leadership in his church was to mean something very, very different than any other thing in this world. Those that were great in his church, those that were to lead his church, were to lead in this way. They were to be servants. Now, we all know that that's not been true. We all know there's, you know, we know the stories. We cringe at them, of the stories of leaders in God's church that have not done this, that have taken leadership in God's church and turned it into leadership in the world, where it is about serving them, where it is about their glory, where it is about them taking rather than being a servant and meeting the needs of others. We know those stories and we don't like them. So the question is, how are we going to not do that? Are we going to determine to not do that? So again, the question is, what are you going to do? The question is not, is this moving you emotionally? The question is not, you know, Jesus cut right through that, right? He's like, what are you going to do? I did this because I want you to do this. Blessed if you do. So we've got to be different people. We've got to be people who look at the world in a different way. So I want to give you a couple of thoughts today. You know, this has to permeate everything we do, obviously. But And that's why I have this little card in front of you today, because surely when we gather as a church, when we're together in his name, this should be the hallmark, right? We ought to be knocking one another down to serve each other in this place. And that ought to permeate. When somebody walks into our midst, boy, they ought to sense this. This ought to be just, there just ought to be a different spirit in the air. That everybody here serves. Everybody here is a servant. We're like, wow, what can we do for you? How can we serve? How can we help? Well, there's needs. Part of what needs to be done is all this stuff needs to get set up. It all needs to get torn down. Words need to get put on screen. John's doing three jobs back there. You know, my wife and I do three jobs every week. We need to stop. Oh, no, I need to keep doing three jobs, but you need to do three jobs too. We need people to commit. And see, the problem is, and the reason people don't do this is because they don't want to commit. Oh, I'd have to give up this or doing this that I like or doing that. Oh, sounds like you might have to become a servant. Sounds like you might have to give up what you love to do what is good for others. Yeah, you get to be great. That's the point, right? Right there is servanthood, where you go, yeah, I'll get treated badly because it's good for somebody else. I'll give up my life so that I might find it, Jesus said. And apparently we find it in servanthood. So that's what this side of the card is. This side of the card is, I will serve. And if you want to do, it's not the only thing. And there's that part of your brain right now that's going, oh, he did this whole thing just to get people to sign up for ministries. That's the part of your brain that didn't get this message. I can guilt you other ways. The point is, and I don't want to guilt you, the point is, do you want to do what Jesus asked you to do? This is one way. It's a need. So servants meet needs. Meet this need. Just put your name, email, and you know, the Christian church is great on, well, I want to serve in the area of my gift. Well, that ain't a servant. You might have a gift, and we want to find out what that is, and we want to put that gift to work. But servants do what needs to be done. You think Jesus had the gift of foot washing? Nobody has that gift, right? Just sign up. We'll call you. We'll figure it out. But you're just saying, I'll serve. I'll do whatever you want. So you can put that in the box back there too. But that's not all you need to do. You need to serve every person that walks in this door. We need to get up in the morning, and when we come together, we need to come with that attitude. I'm here to serve. I come early. Why? Well, because there might be somebody new I could talk to, or there might be something that needs to be done. I'll just be there. I'll just serve. I'll just do what needs to be done. And this is hard. It makes you organize your family differently. You know, it causes all no end of trouble in your life. Great. That's what servanthood is. And boy, so especially when we come together in our small groups, this ought to be what permeates the air. But it ought to permeate your life if you want to be great. Look, there are going to be great people in heaven. You want to be one of those great people? I do. Because it's good. It brings God glory for all those reasons. But you got to do it this way. You got to give up your life in this world and you have to serve. There is no other way. So, we don't want to be a church of people who are just so impressed with the message every week. Whew, that's really bad. We want to be people who are doers of the word. Blessed if you do. I want to see you all blessed. So I'm going to needle you and I'm going to try to help you do. Because that's the only thing that counts. So, and there's lots of people serving here. It's not like nobody serves. Don't take this as a spanking. I am not spanking anybody. I'm just trying to help you put into action. Now, there's other things you can do. You can serve people in all kinds of ways. And we should have eyes, that pray. God says he's prepared good works in advance that you should do them. There are certain things God wants you to serve in. And we need to pray and ask God to reveal those things to us so we can see them and do them. Okay, that's enough. Let's ask God to show us, where do you want me to serve, God? Where could I lose my life to bring you glory and become a servant? Father, we want to ask that. We want to ask you to open our eyes. Lord, I'm sure I walk by things that you want me to do because I think, well, that's not the kind of thing I do. Or I think I shouldn't have to do or whatever. God, help me, Lord. Help open my eyes. Show me. Lord, I just think if you were here, we would just be so struck by how you didn't think about yourself at all. We'd be so taken aback by a man that was such a servant. And I pray you'd help us become like that. Lord, we want to be your representatives. We want to be people that others can look at and they would know what you are like to a small degree, Lord. All the bad press that your enemy puts out there about you, Lord, we could cut through because we were so different, because our goals were so different, because you have just shown us what true greatness is, and we would strive for that. So, Lord, I just pray to help us in that. In Jesus' name, amen.